Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hexed and Hitched by Stephanie Damore. Narrated by Marie Hawkins and TJ Clark. Chapter 1. Avery. Where is my daughter? The woman's voice snaps from the doorway. All eyes lock in on the mother of the bride. I finish zipping up the back of a bridesmaid's pink chiffon dress as Morgana Rigatti crosses the threshold and assesses the room. The woman's platinum blonde hair is twisted so tight into an updo that her eyebrows look like they're going to reach her hairline. Who knew a shrew shifter could look so threatening? I glance around the bridal suite, searching for Maya. One of the hairstylists is working diligently on the grandmother of the bride, using enough hairspray to make her a fire hazard. The elderly lady fans herself to ward off the fumes. Meanwhile, the other stylist adorns the maid of honor's updo with pearl-tipped bobby pins. It's a coordinated effort. Lily points, and the stylist places the pins. She was just here a minute ago, I reply, avoiding eye contact with the irate Morgana. My gaze sweeps the room, which is abuzz with activity. 10 attendants, not counting the flower girl, all seem to require assistance, fixing their high heels, zipping up dresses, or fastening necklaces. Behind me, a flurry of camera clicks and flashes erupts as the assistant photographer captures the bride's dress hanging on a wooden hanger, its beaded and lace fabric shimmering in the light from various angles. My gaze shifts to the makeup artist, meticulously touching up her lipstick in front of an oversized mirror. Yet Maya, the center of this whirlwind, is conspicuously absent. I'm sure she didn't go far. Lily's voice chimes in as her hair is finely styled to perfection. I agree. Maya isn't a runner. As a wedding planning witch who can read emotions, I should know. Maya and Kyle are a love match. I could feel the affection rolling off them in waves from the moment they first stepped foot in my shop. Warmth spread throughout my body with each glance they shared. It was as genuine a love as I have ever felt. They quickly became favorite clients, especially when Morgana wasn't around. Maya is a no-nonsense bride who doesn't sweat the small stuff and speaks her mind freely. If only all my brides were so easygoing. Aren't you going to find her? Morgana's voice slices through the air, accompanied by a pointed stare that makes Lily flinch. Lily's eyes dart between her unfinished appearance and Morgana's unyielding gaze. Clearly, she has a date with a dress and a mascara wand. I'll go, I volunteer, offering Morgana a reassuring smile despite her frosty demeanor. My exit from the suite is met with a lingering scowl from the woman who has made her dissatisfaction abundantly clear. Walking out into the corridor, I feel a rush of fresh air, both literally and figuratively. The hotel's interior design effortlessly blends luxury with the comfort of oceanfront charm. The polished white marble floors gleam, reflecting the golden sun's rays streaming in through expansive windows. Plush sofas and cozy armchairs adorned with blue and white striped cushions beckon guests to relax and savor the stunning views of the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, Maya, I'm sure you're here somewhere. I'm not concerned. Even the calmest of brides sometimes need a moment before saying I do. I quickly walk down the hallway, popping my head into public restrooms and searching private sitting areas that overlook the landscape below. As I head toward the door to the outdoor ceremony, I pass by a small alcove. Beautiful artwork depicting a serene beach scene lines the wall. The gentle sound of water trickling from a nearby indoor fountain creates a soothing undertone. It would be the perfect place to take a moment to collect your thoughts, but Maya isn't here. Stepping outside, I come to an abrupt halt. Troy, my best friend and master carpenter, has truly outdone himself. The wedding setup is pure magic. A wooden pergola crafted by Troy stands draped in billowing white fabric at the edge of a meticulously kept lawn, gently sloping toward the sugar-white sands of the ocean. Rows of pristine white chairs are neatly arranged, facing the rolling waters, forming an aisle adorned with lanterns hanging from rustic shepherd hooks. With the late September sun setting soon, we don't have time to waste. I scan the wedding setup, hoping to catch a glimpse of Maya. The wedding guests, dressed in their finest attire, chat softly amongst themselves, waiting for the ceremony to begin, unaware of the bride's absence. Touching my earpiece, I radio down Detroit to see how things are going on his end. What you need, Butterfly? Troy's deep voice resonates in my ear. Everything all good there? I ask, trying to keep the worry from my voice. Give me 10 minutes and we'll be ready to roll. The last of the guests are being seated now. And the groom? He's good. Well, he looks like he wants to choke the photographer, but what man wouldn't after smiling for 1,000 photos? Okay, I just need to find the bride. You need my help. The background noise grows fainter as Troy instinctively heads my way. I shouldn't. She should be right here. But I can't find her, I admit, the unease creeping into my voice. I thought you said she wasn't a runner. She's not, trust me. The amount of love she feels for Kyle is off the charts. But I lower my voice, keeping the conversation private. Something doesn't feel right. A growing sense of unease begins to gnaw at me, a disconcerting feeling that I can't quite shake. For a moment, I think it's my own fear as my palms grow clammy and I struggle to steady my breathing. It takes a second, maybe 2 heartbeats, for me to realize that these are someone else's emotions that I have tapped into. I slowly drop my magical shields to get a full read of the situation. I'm not prepared for the emotional rush. I stop mid-stride, my heart pounding as a jumble of conflicting feelings pummel me. Confusion intertwines with anger, while triumph and satisfaction mingle in a confusing cocktail. Drawing a deep breath, I close my eyes, focusing on the surge of emotions coursing through me. Each emotion feels like a distinct thread, woven together into a complex knot. The thread representing anger blazes a fiery red, its intensity momentarily overwhelming. Gently, I isolate it from the rest and concentrate on the thread of triumph, a blinding, radiant yellow. As I carefully pull them apart, the knot starts to loosen. Talk to me, what's going on? Troy's voice crackles in my ear, a concerned undertone in his words. I hear Troy, but my focus is squarely on the task of untangling the emotions. Avery! Troy's voice persists faintly in the background. I crack one eye open while I continue separating the emotions. As I move, I keep my empathic senses attuned, trying to block out the other emotions around me. The intensity of the threads fluctuates with each step, guiding me toward the heart of the situation. Avery Marie Fitzpatrick. Troy's stern use of my full name finally snaps me out of my empathic trance. What? I'm working here. I hiss back into the earpiece. Don't leave me in the dark like that. What's going on? Troy's concern is evident. It's not me. I'm fine. Something's going on with the bride. I can't figure out where she's at. Being a human barometer has its quirks. Right now, I consider it a plus that I can track the emotional threads. However, it's a double-edged sword, capable of leading me down an unpredictable path. I have no clue where the trail will take me or what awaits at its end. I recenter my focus on the task at hand, tracing the threads that seem to draw me closer to the ceremony setup. I move discreetly along the periphery, careful not to disrupt the preparations. I exchange a brief nod with the officiating minister as I pass, who seems to question my presence. 10 minutes, I respond with a warm smile, addressing the unspoken query. The sound of waves washing ashore serves as a soothing backdrop to the quartet's pre-ceremony music. Troy is right. Some guests have already taken their seats, while others linger at the end of the rows, awaiting the official start of the ceremony. Out here, exposed with my emotional shields down, the guests' feelings overwhelm my senses. Weddings are always charged with energy. Even with my shields up, they can leave me feeling giddy or, as Troy often jokes, love drunk. But in this state, it's almost too much. You need me. Troy's voice softly murmurs in my ear. My hands rest on my hips as I survey the scene. I think I do. She might have shifted. I'm not sure what would have caused the bride to shift into her animal form, but I'm pretty sure that's what has happened, seeing she is nowhere in sight and I'm at emotional ground zero. Whatever we do, we have to keep it on the down low. Most of the guests are supernaturals accustomed to magical occurrences, but there are still some unsuspecting humans among us. The last thing we want is to expose our world of spells and shapeshifting to the uninitiated. Troy doesn't say anything else. Less than 2 minutes later, I look up, and there he is. Troy has shifted into his brown falcon form, a sight that always makes my heart do a little flutter no matter how many times I ignore it. With a watchful eye, he surveys the distant waves, the expansive beach, and the surrounding landscape. Troy possesses an uncanny knack for tracking and assessing, honed through years of experience as both a shifter and a skilled pilot. "There's the wedding planner," someone half whispers, returning me to the present. I make eye contact with the groom's mother and smile. I'm careful to school my features, but I must have let some of my concern slip as the woman makes a beeline for me. "Is everything all right?" she asks, with a falsely sweet tone, pulling me aside. "Oh, absolutely," I reply, forcing cheerfulness into my voice while trying to ignore Troy's aerial reconnaissance. "We're just giving the bride a few more minutes to get ready." My eyes shift to the groom, Kyle, who remains blissfully unaware, chatting with his friends. The photographer has since moved on, now snapping photos of the ceremony setup. I debate telling Kyle what's happening, but I don't want to panic him if I don't have to. I'll give it a few more minutes and talk to him if Maya is still MIA. Just then, I glance up and witness Troy swooping lower to the ground, a signal that he has detected something promising. "If you'll just excuse me." I sidestep the groom's mother and walk as quickly as possible without making a scene. As I hasten my steps, a black cat darts toward me, carrying something in its mouth. I come to a sudden halt, my eyes widening at the unexpected sight. At first glance, it seems like a mouse, but upon closer inspection, I realize it's a shrew. This cannot be happening. "Oh no, oh no, you can't eat the bride," I exclaim, my voice a mix of panic and disbelief. I kick off my heels and sprint across the grass in pursuit of the cat. If only I possessed the knowledge of spells, I'd summon a hero's cape and whisk Maya to safety in a heartbeat. The black cat sprints across the lawn with a level of enthusiasm typically reserved for a catnip-induced frenzy. "Get back here right this minute!" I try to cut off the cat's escape route with some well-placed zigzags, but its agile maneuvers turn my chase into an accidental interpretive dance routine. If anyone saw me now, I'd never hear the end of it. I look up at Troy, wondering what he's waiting for. Without hesitation, he tucks his wings close to his body, and like a feathered arrow, he begins a breathtaking dive toward the ground. The wind whistles around him as he gains speed, mirroring the cat's movements and calculating the perfect moment to intercept it. The cat might have been able to outmaneuver me, but he was no match for Troy. In one fall swoop, Troy catches the cat with his talons, careful not to cause any harm. The delicate balance between capturing and not injuring the cat is a testament to Troy's mastery of his shape-shifting abilities. In the blink of an eye, the scene transforms before us. The bride now stands where the shrew once was, wrapped in her elegant white silk robe. The words, "Mrs. Brooks," are beautifully embroidered on the back in gold thread, a reminder of her monumentous day. But there is no time for celebration. The cat transforms back into a full-grown man. He stands before us, dressed in black leather with a goatee and a bad attitude. Troy also returns to his human form and secures the man's arms tightly behind his back. It's a good thing shapeshifters can seamlessly pull their clothes into their shifts. Otherwise, this scene would be incredibly awkward. I rush forward to check on Maya. "Are you okay?" "He's trying to kidnap me!" Maya's glare at the man could melt steel. Her fury is evident, and it's clear she isn't going to let this incident go without a fight. I had thought her mother looked fierce, but Maya took it to a new level. Troy's grip tightens on the man, who makes the unwise decision to insult the bride despite the circumstances. "He tried to kidnap you." My voice brims with anger. "I snuck out to look at the ceremony, and Deacon grabbed me."
"You know him?"
Troy asks, his voice eerily calm. "He's my ex, a pathetic one at that."
"Pathetic, huh? I'll show you, you little—"
Troy seizes the opportunity to twist Deacon's hands tighter, effectively cutting off the insult. "You couldn't handle rejection before, and you can't handle it now," Maya declares, her voice dripping with disdain.
"I should never have dated a rat." Deacon kicks back, attempting to break free. His shoe connects with Troy's thigh, making my best friend lurch forward from the blow. Swiftly, Troy's trained reflexes kick in, and he expertly twists Deacon's body to face him. Troy delivers a single powerful blow to Deacon's midsection. The impact lands with an almost audible thud, and the air seems to whoosh out of Deacon's lungs instantly. Deacon collapses to the ground in a heap, his body folding like a wet towel that has lost its shape. "Idiot," Troy mutters under his breath. He brushes off the smudge of dirt and grass that Deacon's footprint has left on his neatly pressed black dress pants, the gesture a nonchalant display of his frustration at the whole situation. Maya stares down at Deacon in disbelief.
"A rat? Really? The only rat here is you.
Do you want me to get Kyle?" I figure Maya wants her soon-to-be husband to know what's going on.
"No, I'll tell him about it later. Deacon's not going to ruin today," she replies, determination resolute in her voice.
Maya locks eyes with her ex as he sits up, still clutching his stomach.
"You will never lay a finger on me again. Do you understand me? You better pray I don't have you cursed,"
she declares with steely resolve.
"You wouldn't."
"What, you think a little shrew doesn't know any witches? Did you forget about my Aunt Ida? I can have her here in 60 seconds.
Fear flashes in Deacon's eyes, but he tries to muster a charming demeanor and sweet-talk his way out of the situation.
"Come on, babe. We had some good times, didn't we?"
he coos, trying to appeal to Maya's emotions.
"Don't babe me. Don't ever speak to me again."
Maya shoots back, dismissing his attempts to manipulate her. As Deacon stands up, Maya pretends to contemplate her options, relishing her moment of power over him.
"Let's see, where should I start?" she muses aloud. "A receding hairline spell?"
Deacon's hand instinctively touches his thick black hair, but Maya isn't finished. With a sly smile, she continues.
"No, that's too blasé."
Troy, observing the exchange, can't help but smile. Deacon takes a step back and licks his lips nervously. Maya snaps her fingers.
"Oh, I know. How about a grooming spell? Every time a bell rings, you'll drop to the ground and lick your..."
"All right, I'm leaving."
Deacon looks down at the ground, not meeting her eyes. But Maya isn't about to let him off that easily.
"I'm sorry, what was that?"
she questions, savoring the moment of revenge.
"I said I understand,"
Deacon bites back.
"You have 10 seconds.
Maya looks down at her wrist as if she's wearing a watch.
"What?"
Deacon asks.
1, 2, 3.
She counts off, raising the stakes and keeping him on edge.
"You better get running. Aunt Ida's right around the corner,"
I chime in, adding to the illusion that an all-powerful witch is about to intervene.
"You people are crazy,"
are the final words out of Deacon's mouth as he turns tail and sprints away.
"I'll make sure he leaves the grounds,"
Troy says, and I nod to acknowledge I've heard him.
"I can't believe that guy. 2 months. We went out for 2 months, and he's been harder to shake than fleas on a fur coat."
Maya tightens her robe and looks over her shoulder. Thankfully, our scene seems to have gone unnoticed by the others.
"Thank you,"
she says as we watch Deacon and Troy disappear from sight. "No problem. We've got your back," I reply, happy Troy and I could save the day. Maya's expression softens.
"You two really are a great team. When are you guys saying I do?"
Her question catches me off guard, and I feel my heart skip a beat. I stumble over my words, desperately hoping my face isn't betraying my embarrassment.
"Me and Troy? What? No. We are not a couple. We're not into each other that way. Just best friends, since preschool. Plus, our moms are best friends. It would be too weird."
I'm babbling now. I know that, but there's no way I'm having this conversation with a client. My sister doesn't even know how I feel about Troy. No one does. It's going to stay that way forever.
"Come on, let's get you back. You have a wedding to get to."
I quickly redirect the conversation, eager to shift the focus away from my personal life.
"Well, if you change your mind, I'm sure it would be a beautiful ceremony."
"Whatever you say, let's go get you married." Maya nods, seeming satisfied with my response, and together we make our way back to the wedding venue. The coastal sunset continues to paint the sky with its breathtaking hues. With any luck, we will have them sealing their vows right as the sun kisses the horizon.
Chapter 2. Avery.
And another couple successfully gets there happily ever after. Troy chimes in beside me, playfully nudging my shoulder. The sight of Kyle and Maya driving away in the white Rolls Royce has us both momentarily lost in thought. I check my watch. It's exactly 10 o'clock, right on schedule. I love it when things work out that way. Nice work on the setup today. That pergola looked stunning. I compliment him.
You think so? Kyle asked if he could buy it from me. They want to set it up in their backyard. I told him I could deliver it after their honeymoon.
Nice. Most venues have standard gazebos or archways for ceremonies, but nothing as impressive as what Troy can create.
It's not a lot, but you can throw it at Mr. McGreedy and see if it'll buy you a little more time.
Mr. McGreedy isn't my landlord's real name, but it's the only name we use for him after he raised my rent for 6 months straight.
What? No, keep that money. I'll figure out how to cover the rent increase. I've gotten lucky so far, booking clients to pay the bills, but sooner or later, my luck might run out.
He was here earlier, Troy remarks.
Mr. McGreedy?
You didn't see him.
No, what the heck? What a creep.
I thought you saw him. He poked his head in at the reception, probably checking to see how business is doing.
What you mean to say is he was checking in to see how much commission I made so he knows how much to raise my rent next month. I can't stand him.
And you're sure you can't curse him?
Wrong witch. Curses and I don't mix. I touch my nose to make sure it's still on my face.
But you know someone who could. Heck, I know someone who could. I'd even ask your sister to hex him, but I don't want to give her any ideas.
I sigh in frustration. I need to find a new location. Troy chuckles because it's not like I haven't been trying. Our once sleepy coastal town has transformed into a bustling tourist destination. The soaring costs of property insurance has chased many locals away, taking the affordable prices with them. Developers are quick to swoop in, snapping up land and jacking up the rent. If this trend continues, there won't be any local shops left, just tourist traps selling seashells and sunscreen.
Our mom's offer isn't looking too bad now, is it?
Troy laughs.
No, absolutely not. I'd go crazy running a business out of their shop. Plus, book a wedding and get a free tarot reading is not the vibe I was going for.
Our mothers co-own the town's metaphysical store, and they have been blessed with a landlord who valued them as much as the community did, providing them with a lifetime lease. It's an arrangement as rare as a blue moon, and they know it.
Think about it. Your mom could peer into her crystal ball and tell couples their marriages were doomed before they even tied the knot.
Right, because nothing says, "Congratulations on your engagement," like forecasting an impending divorce. I reply with heavy sarcasm. That would be terrible for business.
I don't know. I bet people would pay big money for that.
And for the record, I can do the same. People's emotions don't lie.
Ah, but the problem is you would never tell the bride that the groom was just after her money, whereas your mom
would say it to her face and offer to hex the man in the process.
Exactly.
I shake my head. I don't even want to think about it. I'll find the perfect place. I just have to be patient.
And in the meantime, if Mr. McGreedy forgets he raised your rent, it's not your problem.
Do not curse that awful man, I snap back.
I can't. Remember, I'm just a shifter.
There's nothing just a shifter about Troy, but I don't tell him that. Instead, I fix him with a stern look. You know perfectly well what I mean.
You do realize how you sound, right? Do not curse that awful man.
He mimics me in an exaggerated tone. Fine, curse him. When the APP comes after you, I'll point my finger at you and say, he did it.
The APP isn't going to come after me. They have far bigger criminals to track.
I fold my arms across my chest in response. Troy is most likely right. The Agency of Paranormal Particularities probably does have bigger fish to fry, but it's the probably part that keeps me in line. For all we know, Mr. McGreedy's niece works for the agency, and he'd find out that we cursed him, and then we'd both end up in jail. It's better to play by the rules.
If you're not going to let me curse him, we better come up with another plan.
Speaking of which, did Mr. or Mrs. Abram stop by? I look around the ballroom, but it's not likely the potential client's parents are there now. They would have stopped by earlier when the event was in full swing.
I invited them to check things out.
Troy whistles. The Abrams, huh? The textile king is finally marrying off his daughter. He must be thrilled. Thinks she'll make it down the aisle this time.
I give Troy a playful smack on the arm, even though, once again, he's right. Monica Abram has literally given her daddy a run for his money. She called off engagements, had clandestine affairs, and threw scandalous parties. The society pages loved her. Let's hope so, and let's hope they book it through me. That commission would bump me up into the next income bracket. Meaning, I'd be able to buy a place instead of just renting it. Why didn't you say so?
I did, yesterday. Does that mean you didn't see them?
No, afraid not. Shoot. Well, I just have to follow up with them tomorrow. They can come to the Sullivan wedding, but that's not for another 2 weeks. And this wedding... I look around the grand ballroom with the crystal chandeliers, fine china, and gleaming hardwood floors.
Was nicer.
Troy finishes my thought for me. Right. I think back to how breathtaking the ceremony had been. You know, sunset weddings are becoming my new favorite.
They do have a certain romantic ambience, don't they?
Troy admits, with a rare hint of sentimentality in his voice. I shoot him a playful smirk, as romance has never been his strong suit.
Speaking of romance, you going to Ryan's tonight?
He asks. No, he's working late ahead of that trip.
He flies out Monday morning.
Tomorrow night. We're going to meet for brunch in the morning. I'm going to call it an early night. What about you? You're back on the market. It's Saturday night. You're off work. You've got some extra cash in your pocket. My jesting words hang in the air, met with an unexpected silence. Surprised, I turn to Troy, only to find him conspicuously absent. I swivel my head, looking in both directions. Troy? I call out, half expecting him to pop up nearby.
Avery, there you are,
she says, dripping with a familiarity that's never been earned. She's Troy's latest flame, or was, last I heard. He's often juggling hearts while I juggle clients. His love life's a carousel that never stops spinning, while mine's more of a relentless search for Mr. Just Right.
Oh, hey, Tessa, what brings you here?
I reply with feigned enthusiasm, even though she's giving off major stalker vibes. I hadn't spotted her at the wedding, and I'm pretty sure she wasn't part of the bride's inner circle. But given that the resort often hosts multiple events, I wouldn't have been surprised if she was just another guest from a different party.
I was looking for Troy. Do you know where he is?
I'm not sure. He was here a little bit ago, I reply, waving a hand vaguely. Just then, I spot Troy, or rather his falcon alter ego, tucked neatly under the dessert table, one rebellious talon peeking out like a secret waiting to be told. He shuffles back at my gaze, vanishing under the drapery of white linen. This game we're playing? It's not hide and seek. It's don't get caught.
You know what? He's probably down at the beach packing up the chairs from the ceremony, I suggest, turning to face Tessa.
Tessa's eyebrows knit together in obvious frustration.
Afraid not. I already checked there.
Waves of determination roll off of her. I'm not sure then. He might have left. My tone is the epitome of innocence.
He left?
Her incredulity would be laughable if not for the edge in her voice.
Maybe. The wedding's wrapped up and the newlyweds are off on their honeymoon, so he was free to go.
The rest of us are going to finish packing up and we'll be out of here shortly.
Really?
Tessa looks around at the amount of work left to be done. The majority of the tables still have glassware on them, and the band hasn't even started packing up. That's the plan, anyway. I'll let him know that you're looking for him if I see him, though. I do my best to sound convincing. Tessa scrutinizes me with suspicion, but what can she really do? Apparently, she can keep questioning me.
Did he mention what he was doing tonight?
Tessa folds her arms across her chest, staring at me, waiting for a response. I feel like I'm 10 years old again, being questioned by the principal after Troy and I let off a spell grenade in the boys' bathroom. A spell grenade is like a smoke bomb, only when you light it, the colored smoke is bewitched with a spell. Some will put you to sleep, others give you the giggles. It depends on the witch who made it. We went with the giggles. In my defense, it was Troy's idea. I clear my throat.
You know, he didn't say.
And that's the truth. Troy hid before he could tell me his plans.
Maybe he's grabbing a bite somewhere.
I really couldn't say.
I deflect again.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?